Good afternoon. Welcome back to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio, Inc., a League of Nations among other Internet radio talk stations, Voices of the People, United We Roar. Today is February 22nd, 2008, and now from 2 to 2:30 Eastern Standard Time, let me present to you Happiness for Women with Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and Martha Trowbridge. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon. Hi, I'm Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein, positive psychologist and happiness coach.
And hello, everyone. It's Martha Trowbridge. I write Inspiration for Women in Crisis. Good afternoon, Lillian.
And here we are on the snowy day in New Jersey and probably in Vermont. Am I right, Martha?
Well, they forecast a zip, and we have about 6 inches already.
Uh-huh.
But Boston's getting 10 to 12 inches, I hear, so.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yes. Well, it's our first snowstorm. We've had absolutely no snow the whole winter. It's been like as if we lived, say, in Georgia or something.
Wow.
And we're now, I'd say, have maybe 3 inches. It's really not much. But most people canceled whatever they're doing.
They're at home having hot chocolate.
Yes, yes, yes. That's a good gateway to happiness, actually, home with the hot chocolate.
It is.
A nice image. And which brings me to our show today, which we're going to talk about the 7 gateways to happiness, which you can find a lot about in so many ways. I'll just tell you, reference you to 2. One is that you can come to the front of my website, enchantedself.com, and you can download for yourself my free white paper on the 7 gateways to happiness and read it at your leisure. The other thing you can do is that Martha and I have talked at length about the 7 gateways to happiness for women, and those recordings, although they're only kept for 3 months on Lillian's site, most of them are archived on my site, and I'm trying to get all of them up. So you can go to, again, enchantedself.com and go to the podcast and radio page of my archives, and you can listen to many shows from March through, I'd say, about June 2008 about happiness, the 7 gateways of happiness. Now,
excuse me, Barbara, that was 2007, last
spring.
Oh,
I'm sorry, 2007. Thank you, Martha.
Oh, that's quite all right. And, you know, it's a year and another week or so that you've been doing this show. I can't believe it.
Yes, that we've been doing this show, yeah.
March 2nd.
It is hard to believe.
Yes, it is.
And even with weeks off and repeats and one of us doing it rather than the other, I would say that we've each participated in at least 30 to 35 shows.
That's
amazing.
True.
It's a lot of shows, and there's a lot of history. There's a lot to learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we thought it would be very timely and very important to start to put the 7 gateways of happiness, or the 7 gateways to happiness, in perspective for girls rather than just for women. I've begun to do this particularly for girls between 8 and 14, often now referred to as tweens. And these are the girls that are the central figures in my new book, The Truth, I'm a Girl, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything.
Right, and Barbara, the age 8, why don't you tell the audience a bit about why that's such an important age in terms of being able to access these gateways?
Well, that's not a answer I was particularly, it's a little different angle than I'm thinking about. Let me reference that between girls 8 to 11 or 12-ish in general, that a lot of the research has documented, and those of us with good enough memories will remember the feelings of strength and jubilation and the capacity for fun and joy and all sorts of capers and strange decisions that were lots of fun and secrets and all sorts of things that go with that age range. And as wonderful as that is, the next age range, say 11 and a half-ish through the teens, can be very precarious for girls, where there's a lot of loss of achievement success, there's tremendous self-esteem problems. Certainly you can recognize that in terms of eating disorders in our time, all sorts of problems with the brat and the bad girl, and jealousies, and the gossiping, and the many, many issues that girls are facing.
And I think in today's American culture anyway, there's an awfully early pressure toward sexuality, toward intercourse with boys at a very premature age.
Right. And those girls that are still shying away from the pressure toward intercourse, but maybe indulging instead in foreplay, which would have been unthinkable in previous generations, are still endangering some of their social and emotional developmental sides of themselves because they're not ready for that either.
And the wounds that come associated with that, with being, for example, dumped or ignored by a boy after you become prematurely intimate with him,
mm-hmm.
it's a very early, early age to have to deal with that kind of thing. So I quite agree that these years are just power-packed with challenges.
They sure are, and as much as there is the excitement and the easy access to laughing hysterically and having fun and thinking up treats and thinking up adventures, on the other side of that coin, there's so much vulnerability, and a mother's remark, a teacher's remark, a slap across the face, being closed out of a particular group and not invited to X birthday party can have a wound that, you know, as adult women, we're fortunately usually not in touch with anymore.
Yes, and I'm also thinking, Barbara, of events at school, such as teachers, coaches, what have you, who may not intentionally hurt you, but you just never forget the words or the look. And
right.
It becomes this horrible print upon you, imprint, negative.
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. It really, really is. So I thought what I'd do quickly, Martha, first is go through the 7 gateways of happiness for girls 8 to 14. I'll call them tweens.
Oh, good.
And then we'll go back and start to talk about the first 3 or 4. Okay?
Great. Mm-hmm.
So the first gateway of happiness, and this pretty much corresponds to the adult first gateway of happiness, is recognizing your talents, your strengths, and holding close to your heart your potential. For adult women, I would say remembering your potential, but with a girl of 8, it's really just holding on to it, just even acknowledging it. There's nothing new to remember. She knows it.
How does she know her potential, Barbara?
Well, now, that's a very good question. Mostly through the sense of the inner sense of integration when she's doing something that we call typically for adults something like a state of bliss. You know, she may or may not know it from the outside. She may know that she's a great pianist for an 8-year-old because 1,000 people have told her.
So competency is part of that recognition, would you say?
Competency may be part of the potential, recognizing your potential, or may not. For example, mm-hmm. a girl may absolutely love to look at home decorating magazines and imagine how to be a decorator.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if she has any real competency in that area, but she has a potential, a love of color, a sense of design that may or may not lead to being able to make an income, but there is self-potential there.
And a passion.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it is recognized by the outer world or not, she's going to have an passionate feeling of glee, of being, you know, just, you know, she doesn't know that time has passed, all the things that we talk about when an adult is having a precious moment, what I call an enchanted self moment, and is often referred to as a state of bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problems are that if you're from a functional family, this is great, you know, because people have probably acknowledged and given you some hope and feedback that's positive about whatever seems to be your interest and your potential.
And supported you in whatever way in terms of helping you connect with groups or classes or internet access or whatever that
right.
Will. Right. Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Although functional families can be so busy that they can't do that for every kid in every way. But probably something's happened that's
mm-hmm.
good. In a dysfunctional family, it can be much harder than even for an adult woman trying to find her potential because the kid is so impressionable.
Right.
So that's gateway one. Gateway two, I talk about falling in love with yourself and appreciating the story of your life in reference to the generations that have come before you. Now, for little girls, if you're from a functional family, this can be a lot of fun. You know, you just love to knit the way grandma loves to knit. You take such pride in enjoying a scrapbook the way your mother has taught you how to do a scrapbook. And it won't be in the big sense, perhaps, of the way a woman will work in the drama of her life. But there is a generational appreciation of oneself. However, from a dysfunctional home, it may be very, very hard because the little girl may be so hurt and angry because of certain family problems that she can't even get past that, where an adult woman may have gotten past it and still appreciate what family have given her.
Mm-hmm. So getting past the sense of negativity in order to maintain a positive self-regard, a sense of being in love with yourself.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. This is going to be even harder for kids.
Yes.
And again, you're seeing already, even as we go through two gateways, that in lots of ways, you know, we think kids have it so easy, but they really don't.
No.
Third gateway, learning to meet your needs and how to negotiate for yourself. Now, trying to turn off my phone. Bear with me one second. Most kids want to really have successful skills. In some ways, this is easier than for adults because that's what they learn in school, and it just is human nature at that age. You know, it's fun to learn. It's fun to incorporate more knowledge and stuff. So learning to meet your needs and getting skills can be, it's just a wonderful time of life to do that. However, here's the however, the family, if they make it hard on a girl to do this type of learning, she may forfeit it in order to be accepted. You know, being accepted, being part of something, even a dysfunctional family, a dysfunctional neighborhood, is so critical.
Mm-hmm.
That she may give that up. She may give up learning the things she needs to learn.
And also, in addition to trying to be accepted, because girls who are different are not accepted regardless of what they give up, I think part of it is also, Barbara, avoiding the insults, the attacks, the ridicule, and so on and so forth. It can just get so overbearing that you just say the heck with it.
Yeah, there's no time or energy left for anything
right.
else.
Exactly.
Yep. That's absolutely true. Now, the next gateway is learning how to replenish and have fun. Now, again, most girls have a natural capacity to have these attributes. They love to have fun, and they love to rest, and they love to have a giant hot fudge sundae and kick off their shoes and, you know, dance in the living room and then sleep and get a good night's sleep. These are all natural instincts, so they're there. But, again, they can be discouraged by remarks, criticisms, disdain. And if they're discouraged, then they may go into a stress mode and they will not do as much replenishing and having fun as they should. Even for an 8 or 9 year old kid, I've had people in my treatment room, they're girls and, well, boys too, but kids 8, 9 years old, their parents made them so nervous, they have forfeited any sense of play on a normal basis.
Mm, that's very sad.
Oh, it's terrible, and I have to teach the parents how they need to play. And the parents usually we'll get it, and then we have a chance to make things better.
Well, there's also at work, Barbara, if you don't mind my commenting, there can be at play, no pun intended, envy on the part of the parents that they're in lives they're not happy about. The laughter and the freedom and the exuberance and the dreaming of children activates a real painful loss within themselves about their lives, and they have to quiet that because they can't.
Yep.
They're not able to deal with their own losses.
You bring up a critical point, Martha, and that is that parents are not always perfect parents. They often have disorders of one sort or another, whether they're very, very minor, where someone just has a tendency to a quick temper once a year that the family lets, you know, lives with, or whether somebody has some real patterns of personality issues or even worse. And actually, kids can start to develop the beginnings of mental problems during this age range if they're thwarted in things like having enough time to replenish and have fun. So you're bringing up the potential generational negative stuff too.
And yes, and just thinking as I'm listening to you about having fun, for the girl to feel she can have fun without associated guilt, which
yes.
can be a huge problem. And as you said, the beginnings of real mental illness, if you're a young girl and every time you're happy, your family, your parents, or whomever frowns upon you, you get to grow up thinking you're not entitled to be happy.
Absolutely. It's really a shame. I think one of the best things for me is I was left alone a lot. In many ways, that was good.
Mm-hmm.
Because the hours that parents might have shown their own personality weaknesses, very often my parents were not around me. And I was just sort of, improvising a fantasy, not a fantasy world, but play
mm-hmm.
combined with homework and eating my way into the refrigerator and whatever else I was
and reading
doing.
Nancy Drew.
Right, and reading Nancy Drew, and, you know, nobody made a remark or a frown. The fifth gateway is finding mentors and being a mentor. Now, I will say that almost 100% girls need to look beyond the family for mentors. Even in the most highly functional, great families that we would just envy if we could see them around their Thanksgiving table, etc., the particular hopes, dreams, talents, passions of a particular child may not be understood. They may be ignored, or they even may be made fun of. So actually, outside mentors are critical for all kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very interesting concept. You know,
it sure is.
Yeah.
Well, as you were saying, parents or families can be competent in certain areas, but not in areas the girl has interest. So if she's able to connect with especially a woman who's doing things that she admires but she doesn't get reinforcement for at home, it shows her that there is a place for her in the world if she follows her interests
right.
and her dreams.
Right. Now, she doesn't need a lot of, I think actually research has shown that everybody, but this can come from the family too, needs at least 1 to 3 mentors when we're growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these mentors don't have to personally know the girl. You know, the girl can find mentoring in biographies. She can be part of, say, a Girl Scout troop where the Girl Scout leader is not particularly interested in her, but is teaching her skills that tie into her mentoring needs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it would be wonderful to have a particular neighbor or grandparent. That's, of course, a real treasure. You know, they always say that grandparents can offer a kind of unbiased, complete love that children remember. The parents may be a little angry at the grandparents for not adhering to all the standards, but it's good for the kids. Okay, now number 6 is staying connected and not isolating. Belonging. For adult women, this is critical to ward off depression. Most girls really do intuitively want to belong. that's the nature, again, of childhood. You know, they just love to play and do and get together with other kids. However, the negative side would be the sensitivities of an individual child and not knowing how to handle her sensitivities against giant stumbling blocks that might be in her societal network, such as maybe she's an only child and the kids she has to deal with are basically from bigger families and they're a little bit bossy, they're a little bit dominant, they can be a brat pretty easily, and she has no skills.
Yes, and if she's from a culture that's different than the predominant culture at the school, that in and of itself can be a huge problem.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of those two boys at Columbine, or three boys, whatever it was, the exclusion of them, they were the oddballs. This is an extreme example. By the time they get to high school, they do not fit in. And look at how their rage gets played out against the whole school, from feeling rejected and feeling laughed at and shamed and ridiculed. It's very, very serious. And also that boy at Virginia Tech last year,
mm-hmm.
that it can get so intense and extreme that the person, the child, the young teenager, whomever, just cannot deal with the feelings, these horrible feelings they experience by not being connected and not feeling they belong.
And you see what happens, then the social animal within us self-destructs, and
mm-hmm.
the person can become a murderer.
Exactly.
So it's a profound importance to help kids stay connected, belonging, and feeling they belong.
Absolutely. And, you know, Barbara, I think that there is more awareness of this in the past, say, decade or two than there was years ago, how critical
yeah.
it is to feel you belong, that you're wanted, that you're accepted, that you're valued.
Right. I agree. I think that's better. Maybe because some extreme circumstances have, again, forced educators and parents to make it more available, make it clearer what we need to do to help a kid stay connected.
Mm-hmm.
The last gateway is positive needs and positive deeds. I'm sorry, positive deeds and positive actions. These are very important when we're adults because we tend to be so overwhelmed with multitasking and so on that sometimes we forget to do the things that make others feel good and make ourselves feel good. I think it's a little different with girls. I think they're so in touch with their inner selves that they kind of know intuitively what's right and what's true. Little kids in general, unless they've already been disturbed by something, you know, if they see a wounded cat out on the lawn, we'll beg the parents, you know, we've got to get this cat to a veterinarian or let's take it in. There's a natural instinct toward kindness, and if kids could control the world, there probably would be food being shipped to all the people that are hungry because
mm-hmm.
kids really have a sense of what's right. But again, societal and family pressures and distortions can be so great that the girl is already cowering and sort of convincing herself that what's wrong is right.
Mm-hmm. Very complicated.
Yep, very complicated and important for all of us. So why don't we go back and at least dabble in 1 and 2, which might work together, recognizing our talents and strengths and also kind of appreciating and falling in love with ourselves and within what we mean as a generational family, an ethnic background, who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know exactly where to start, but I'll tell you what popped into my head was Laura Ingalls in The Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, right.
Yes.
What a wonderful, this true
yes.
story and a wonderful series.
Mm-hmm.
And think of how many years later people are still interested in her story.
Oh, yes. And here she was from quite a functional, but not a completely functional family. They certainly were under stress. They had to move many times. They lived on potatoes one winter. I mean, I'm sure we don't even have a sense of the limitations they faced. They often were isolated away from neighbors. They had illness. One of the sisters was blind. I don't know if she stayed blind her whole life or it was corrected. Lots of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, she had such a sense of generational pride. She remembered all the stories, so that she actually wrote books about the episodes that happened in the various houses they lived in as they went west, probably 30, 40 years after these things had happened.
And look how her parents, from a very early age, nurtured her, even though they weren't, you know, PhDs or university professors.
Right.
They really cherished her talent in her unique way of looking at the world, and that gave her the confidence to do what she did, to do her writing and all the other things she did with her life.
Right. And they had enough energy, who knows how, you know, to work the field and prepare food practically, practically from scratch, and seamstress the clothing and so on, and yet they gave their girls a sense that they were special and loved, and they were
had part, potential.
They had potential,
right.
And they were part of a world.
Yes, definitely.
So these she's a wonderful example, and I think if we looked even harder, I don't have the book here to review it. Well, it's actually one of seven books, but we could probably spend hours on various factors that the parents built in and stuff that helped them stay stabilized emotionally and hopeful.
And they're timeless. They really are. When you see what makes really good parenting and what helps a child, excuse me, to grow and to blossom, they're really timeless values.
Right, right. And I do know that the girls were part of everything, you know, that they helped with all the chores, and they went to town, and they had all the fun of picking out the material for clothing, and they understood about the animals, and they understood so many things that I think in today's world often parents forget to teach their kids or take any interest in.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I do want to mention, usually I mention my own books, which would be natural, you know, but there's a wonderful book out called The Daring Book for Girls, and what that book does is it gives mothers and girls and Girl Scout leaders and, you know, people who spend time with the girls all sorts of things to do and how to do them, whether it's learning how to saw a piece of wood or making something in the kitchen or how do you climb a tree. But in other words, accessing the interests and strengths and potential that are within kids, which is probably what the Engels were doing out of survival and just their own natural sense of family every day.
Mm. That's great. I'll have to look for that book. I wasn't aware it was around.
Yeah. There's one for boys, too. I am, of course, right now more interested in the girls' books since I'm focusing on the girls.
Well, Barbara, I'd like to get to read it for myself.
Yeah.
And see what I can pick up.
Sure.
We're all girls at heart, are we not?
We sure are. We
mm-hmm.
sure are. So,
I think we're out of time,
we're
my
out
dear.
Of time. But I think this was a good start. We went through the seven gateways of happiness for tweens, girls between 8 and 12 or 13, or into 14, depending on the girl. And we discussed a little more fully the first two gateways, relating them to the Engels and Laura from the Little House on the Prairie series. And I hope we can stay with this. You can really read about a tween that you're going to fall in love with in my new book, The Truth, I'm a Girl, I'm Smart, and I Know Everything. And if you go to my website, there's lots of specials on how to get the book, or, of course, on Amazon. It'll be in the bookstores soon. And I hope to hear from you, and I'm just dying for people to read the book. Read it with your girls as a mother-daughter project, and I'm giving out free necklaces and all sorts of prizes for mothers and daughters that will share with me their reactions to the girl.
Mm-hmm. And so, you're also hoping to do some teleseminars for mothers and girls to celebrate Mother's Day, aren't you?
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Yes.
It really would. Oh, it would be so great if we could get mothers and daughters both on, which is
right.
Terrific.
So perhaps you could do some postings on the website about what's coming up then.
I'd hope you do it. Would help me with that, Martha.
Sure.
Sure, we would be great together on that. Martha, tell people how they can reach you. We'll have to sign off for today.
Right. I'm Martha Trowbridge. My website is www.marthatrowbridge.org. And thanks so much for listening.
Bye.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. You've just listened to Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein and Martha Trowbridge in Happiness for Women Only. And if you want to listen to the program all over again, please go over to http://internetvoicesradio.com. On the left-hand side of the page, you'll see the word archives. Click on that. A list of names will appear, Dr. Barbara Becker-Holstein's and Martha's among them. Click on her name, those names, and you shall hear. PIVTR, whether providing you with the advice of experts or giving a voice to the average person who would not otherwise be heard. PIVTR emphasizes quality and enriching programs for our listeners' enjoyment. And Maupassant said this in 1887, the great artists are those who impose their personal vision upon humanity. Our next scheduled show begins at 3:30 this afternoon with Holly Campbell and What a Woman Can Do, and then on Sunday afternoon we have Spotlight Review with Mix Alex S., Authors on Track with Janet Elaine Smith, Book Sense with Sean Kelly, Elephant in the Living Room, and then Authors in the Spotlight. We are spotlighting this week Patricia A. Guthrie on her book In the Arms of the Enemy, and it's about racetrack racing and what they do to the horses. So I hope you can all join us. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Bye.